This is an election briefing interview with Trevor Mallard, the Minister responsible for race relations.
Coordinating Minister of Race Relations.
Coordinating Minister of Race Relations. I thought, as the context to this, I thought I'd start with the extracts from these memos which were released by TVNZ yesterday. And I'd like you to sort of comment on what you think of each of these quotes from Brian Sinclair. Setting the very best strategy means getting the right mix of people around you. I think you have limped along this year due to a chronic shortage of equipped, competent, super efficient and campaign experienced people around you. At a quick glance, everything is much like it was when Bill was leader. As nice as we all might be, the team that sits around the table on Tuesday afternoons will not deliver you across the beehive next year, I am absolutely convinced of this. We have to accept that we've got and find ways to work right around it. Paying people, existing people, to sit around and do next to nothing for the next 6 to 9 months while you supplant the right people into key positions of influence is a real option. So this is November 2004, fairly recently. Brian Sinclair has been characterised by Jerry Brownlee as an individual whose responsibility is to lay out the chairs. Does that sound like the sort of advice?
Well, I've noticed this young man travelling around with Don Brash, and there's no doubt that the leader of the opposition doesn't take him as one of his sort of generally two trusted officials, Richard Long and Mr. Sinclair. You don't take someone around the country in order to lay out the chairs. This is the sort of advice that's coming from someone who is a strategist. Whether or not it's good advice, I'm not sure, but it's a clear sign that someone who's in a paid position is indicating to the leader that he thinks that the significant parts of the rest of the team are wanting. And what he's also made clear is that some of the people that he's talking about are the deputy leader of the opposition and the special assistant member assisting the leader of the opposition, Murray McCulley, which is sort of it's a weird situation.
Okay, and then he talks about funding. You need to collect the booty now, and you cannot rely on Stephen or Judy or anyone else to achieve this. They don't live in the same room as the donors. They represent the National Party, of which the donors are sceptical, particularly when they see who you have close by to you, Murray, Jerry. Your ability to collect is being eroded every day that goes by.
Well, what is clear from the spend is that the National Party has had an ability to collect money. I would tend to say it's been through some of the business roundtable contacts and other contacts. And what's also obvious is that now is that people are spending money on behalf of the National Party designed to assist their campaign. Now, how much? I have no evidence of coordination of that. But I think you don't need to be a rocket scientist to recognise exclusive brethren when they come into Parliament, and there's no doubt that exclusive brethren have been regular visitors to the gallery over the last year or so, not visiting Labour Party people.
To the gallery?
Yeah, to the gallery of Parliament, which is where people tend to get met.
Okay.
It's a waiting place.
The exclusive brethren associations with the National Party are something which is going to be extremely difficult to prove because of the nature of the exclusive brethren.
That's certainly the case. And I've never had anything to do with them by way of select committee when I've been involved in industrial relations matters. They have some very firm views in that area.
So they lobby quite a lot?
They certainly, on industrial relations matters, lobby at the through the select committee. That's been my contact. I have a vague memory of about 17 or 18 years ago, people coming to see me in my office when I was a junior backbench MP in my electorate on industrial relations matters again, but never on environmental matters or health matters or anything like that.
Much has been made of the fact that they spend a whole lot of money in the States to support Bush. Here they seem to be spending a similar amount of money, which, given the relative size of the congregations, makes you wonder whether the money's coming from the New Zealand Church.
I know that within the Exclusive Brethren there are a number of people who are quite wealthy, and the money could well be coming from within New Zealand.
$500,000?
I think, to be fair to people, I mean, there are some very wealthy people, and they are not necessarily caught up in some of the material matters that many of the population are, and even for a congregation of 2,000 people, which I understand is roughly their number according to the census, I think they could get together that sort of money.
Is there any reason to think there's any connection between the Exclusive Brethren and Brian Nicole?
I have no evidence of that sort of connection. All I know is that Brian Nicole is the past master at doing, or at least attempting to do, blind advertising. The fact that he was caught doing it for John Banks. And remember, you know, and I believe John Banks on this matter, Banks didn't know what was being done for him.
Okay. Well, to get us back to Brian Sinclair here, we have another quote. We need to be sloppy, soft and wet, i.e. open up the chequebook, as excruciating as this will feel. There's a large government surplus and the real result will be determined by who the public thinks is best to spend it. Soft centre voters are inherently self-interested and will vote according to what they can get out of you. Election-winning behaviour requires you to slosh those funds around and buy your way to the Treasury benches.
Well, there's no doubt that is the approach that Don Brash is taking, and it really just makes you sort of wonder whether he believes in anything. I mean, he's a mess, in fact. This is a very clever way of doing the massive shrinking of the state, which I think is on the Business Roundtable and the far-right's agenda. I mean, what is absolutely clear is that their figures do not add up. $7 billion of additional spending, $3.5 billion of extra borrowing that they've admitted to, and of course the interest rates effects of that, which can't sit very well with the former Reserve Bank governor. But what is left is that there's still got to be $3.5 million taken out of expenditure, and I think that it really probably goes back. I mean, I'm not going to blame the official in this case. I mean, Don Brash has in the past said that it's okay in a greater cause to mislead the public, something that he said when he was Reserve Bank governor, and he was referring in particular to election campaigns. So I think there's a degree of that occurring. I'm not going to blame John Key. I mean, I frankly think that John Key is a he might be a working class hero who's made a lot of money, but he is also exceptionally naive.
Michelle Bogue also ran the coup against Neeson, which had John Key appointed to his seat.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that John Key is seen as a high flyer, and you know, I think that it's inevitable that he'll end up leading the National Party at some point. But I think currently, while he's got a lot of understanding of the way that money markets work, he doesn't have a good understanding of the way government accounts work, and I think he's naive. Now, Brash is not naive. Brash knows absolutely what he's doing. And what Brash does want to do is that he wants to have less spending on health, he wants to have less spending on education, and he has no belief whatsoever in having a universal superannuation.
Okay. The final email in this list is one from Peter Keenan, and it says, the story should be, one, we have a social time bomb developing in the nexus of welfare traps in a failing education system, with a scandalous concentration of Maori at the bottom of the heap because of it. This is inevitably accompanied by a spiralling crime rate. One of the things which is most evident in the story in the Sunday Star Times was the advice that they gave him on race relations. It's something that I've already asked you about, the connection between why they would want to raise the issue of race relations. How do you see this panning out in the next couple of weeks?
I actually think that race relations didn't go that well for them when they formally attempted to raise it just over a week ago. The focus group work that I've seen indicates that people had already built what they'd said into the into the their views. I think the point that we're at now is that there is a level of understanding that we have, we're going to have an enormous reliance on Maori and Pacific Island people going forward, for, as far as our economy is concerned. That in the past, things have not been nearly as good as they should have been. I think there is an acceptance that, that our government has been working on those issues through Hui Taumata and other approaches, and very successful in some cases. I mean, the school leaver rates for Maori and Pacific kids have dropped away. They're staying at school much longer. There's a lot of evidence in South Auckland now that the early literacy rates are improving. But for reasons that around the New Zealand psyche that I can't quite get my head around yet, people, you know, people of my age and younger want to have their superannuation. They know that to have their superannuation and to have proper universal health care when they're older, they're going to need an active working population achieving their potential, and that's going to include an increasing proportion of Maori and Pacific people. But there's an itch that gets scratched, and the National Party likes scratching that itch.
But does that scratch some kind of political button that you push, and then there's a whole lot of nod, nod, wink, wink in the pubs, and Don Brash is talking sense?
I think that certainly was the case around Uruiwa One. I mean, I think there was, you know, there was not much doubt about that. I think that's now been built into the system. And I think people have also been thinking about it. The other thing which I think Don Brash misses is that now an enormous proportion of New Zealanders are either Maori or related to Maori or a Pacific Island or related to Pacific Island.
Well, it's a high-risk strategy, but at the same time, it's also a strategy which has provably worked in the past, and it's one which is very cynical and destructive.
And I think they've tried it and missed.
You honestly don't think that the latest bounce in the polls got anything to do with race relations?
I think that people should be very careful about relying on one poll through one system, out of one TV channel, for what's happening in the polls.
There was the Pauwhare comments, just one last question. The Pauwhare comments where he followed up the speech by basically attacking Maori culture. Mm. I mean, that is appealing to prejudice.
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, I have made comments on Pauwhare in the past. I mean, my view is that we over-rely on Pauwhare within our school system, that they sometimes go on for far too long, that many of the people involved don't understand them, that sometimes we put women in the back when they should be in the front. So I think we have to take some, you know, care. Having said that, you know, short Pauwhare, the appropriate place, I think are good. And the idea that he denigrates the haka, especially so soon after the All Blacks had brought in the brilliant new haka, is something which just amazed me. I think he lost a lot of people when he did that.
Thank you. All right.